Kia ora. This program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
When you feel sad for a long period of time, then it leads to depression, you know? And I guess, you know, not having that community sort of environment and setup and support puts them in a very difficult situation where make that time to seek support when you're going through a trialing situation or when you're going through a crisis, and or when you're overwhelmed by life. You know, life can be overwhelming at times, you know, and we feel like as men we have to have it all together.
Every voice has something to teach.
Between two worlds we rise, between two worlds we try, stories heal, stories stay.
Kia ora whānau, welcome back to another podcast from this series, Between Two Worlds. And I have a very special guest, he's a good colleague and friend here again, Demisa, how are you?
I'm good.
Good to see you again, brother.
Yeah, likewise, man. It's been a while. Good to see you. Good to be here. I see you guys have upgraded. I'm liking right. The new studio, man. It's nice.
Yeah, thank you for coming again from, was 2-3 years ago or something, like when we did last podcast.
It was a while back, yes.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, it's really good to have back, and this time we're talking about a different topic. Mm-hmm. So before we get into that, let me say, the people who is watching and listening, maybe they don't know who you are. If you give you the mic to introduce yourself, how you'd like to introduce yourself.
Sounds good. Kia ora everyone, my name is Demisa. I migrated here in 1998, which seems like a long time ago, from Ethiopia as a former refugee. I lived between here and Australia for some time. I've worked with people mostly, volunteering in communities, working with youth. I'm currently a social worker, working with change makers, and so yeah, that's pretty much me in a nutshell.
Right. So that's cool. So all this time, what have changed? What have changed in your experience, like leaving between? Did you grow up here, or you come as a little one?
Yeah, I came here when I was 8 years old.
8 years old.
Yes,
right.
Absolutely. I feel like I didn't know enough to be, you know, fully part of my culture. Right. And I was still kind of trying to find my place within society here. Where is my group of people? Where is my clan? Where is my tribe?
Right.
You know, I think we all kind of go through that phase in life. Mm-hmm. And so in 2016, I went back home after 20 years of being away. Mm-hmm. And it kind of made me realize, yes, I do have a whakapapa. There's a place that I belong to. There's people that I belong to. And just roaming the street without feeling like I stood out felt really comfortable. Mm-hmm. Because in life, the most important thing is that sometimes we don't understand who we are ourselves. Mm-hmm. And that journey also takes time, you know. You have to give yourself time to listen to yourself and understand who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like in 2016, I was going through a bit of that, you know, trying to understand who I am, why, what's my purpose, and what it is that I feel comfortable in. Where is it that I belong? There's no slot per se, but through that kind of questioning, you understand who you are, and you understand from learning about yourself and your culture, and beginning to understand what that is for you, allows you to be in a place where every space, whether it's personal, whether it's professional, every space you occupy, you bring your authentic self.
Mm.
The way in which that space interacts with that is beyond you, you know? And I guess the most important thing is that the external is the external. If we let it in, then it can impact how we feel, how we see the world and all these things, you know? And I think sometimes we're very reactive. We react to things in life, you know?
Yeah.
And we don't really give ourselves time to actually think about what it is that we want, you know, how it is that we want to approach something, you know?
Mm.
So, yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We are reactive people, like, as a humans. But from your journey back home, how that's reactive, let's say, how that impacted your life after that, when you come back to New Zealand, what did you see? between that journey, we went back home and you see the language and things?
I think the biggest thing for me was to reconnect back with my roots, you know. I don't really understand my language that well. I don't really know much about my culture. I don't really know much about the Ethiopian history as well. Ethiopia is a very rich culturally, ethnically, as an old civilization as well. Mm-hmm. Ethiopia, fun fact, has never been colonized as well. So yes. All these things that make me proud to be an Ethiopian, understanding who I am, allows you to actually feel good within yourself, you know, because I think, you know, our self-image and how we see ourselves is how we operate throughout life, you know. If you see yourself as someone who's missing something, you always feel incomplete and you don't show up as your full self, or you don't really show up with your full potential, you know.
Yeah.
And yeah, I guess, you know, like understanding my culture, getting involved in my community, you know, performing, writing songs, you know, I kind of write songs in my spare time. It's a way that I express myself. And the thing about music is an interesting way to express yourself. It could be something quite dark. It could be something quite sad. But you can have it, you can share it with people, not people associating that to you. They're not going to say when you're on stage performing that, oh, this person is going through this. Mm. They're thinking, wow, you know, they either relate to it or they acknowledge those feelings and sentiments, you know?
Yeah.
So music's an interesting way to express yourself. And so, yeah, by getting, as I said, getting in touch with my language, my culture, my community, being involved in the community, has allowed me to learn. By learning about my culture, I've learned about myself throughout that process and come to the realization that, you know, in life, as I said, the external is the external, right?
Yeah.
But if you feel comfortable within yourself, it takes time to get to that point, you know? If you feel comfortable within yourself, you'll always show up your authentic self, you know? And, you know, obviously you have times where you get knocked back by certain experiences, you know, within life or within society. But, you know, at the end of the day, the foundation is there for you to fall back on, you know. And I think the more you run away from yourself, the more you shed, like, who you are to fit in, the difficult it is for you to be your authentic self, you know. And it's important to really understand what it is that you... who you are first. I think it's like most people, most of us, the knowledge we have, how we see the world, is based around our environment. And we don't really understand who we are ourselves, or how it is that we feel about certain stuff, you know. And by understanding that, we can navigate in a manner that is ideal to us and our true self, you know.
Wow, wonderful. It's amazing, Denise. And I know in your profession as well, you're a social worker.
That's right, I'm a social worker. Yeah, so. I studied at Fitria, graduated in 2023. So being a social worker for, you know, recent, quite new to the field and what have you. But, you know, I've been working in the refugee space with change makers. You know, you deal with people who are coming here to New Zealand and the sentiments around, you know, like completely having no idea of the system, no idea of the language, and trying to start off from, you know, from nothing, you know. And so, like, helping people navigate through their journey is fulfilling, and sometimes you can't gauge the impact that you have on people. But at a vulnerable time, if you're just there, truly listening, and trying to understand, like, what support can I give these people at this time, you know? Just you being there is something for them, you know? And I guess sometimes we feel like we have to do something that is tangible and stuff, but just being, you know, being there, allowing them to share how it is they're feeling about their resettlement journey, what it is that they're trying to achieve, what are their aspirations. It's the basic stuff that that initially need, you know? And allowing them to attain those things, like, you know, suitable housing. As you know, there's a housing crisis. Things are quite difficult for, you know, ordinary Kiwis as well. Imagine those who don't understand the language, they don't have any rent history or anything of that nature. So things are twice as difficult for them to settle in and really have a really good start with regards to their integrational journey.
So all that How do you think these all factors that contribute to the mental health?
You know, the concept of mental health is quite it's a Western concept, right?
Yes, it is.
The concept of seeing counselors when you have a problem or you're fully kind of overwhelmed with something. But in a collective society, you have a really tight-knit community that allows you to express, you know, like your everyday troubles that you're going through. And by talking to people and in a very informal way, allows them to deal and release that mental pressure. But in the West, we live in an insular society, right? Everyone is very individualistic. Can't even say that word. Individualistic. You know what I'm saying?
No.
It's a bit of a mouthful. But, you know, like, it's... So then when they come here, those social networks and those kind of community is missing for them. So... They're not used to seeking out, you know, the kind of Western
system
of seeking support when you're overwhelmed by stress, when you're overwhelmed by everything that's happening in your life, and allowing you to, you know, build that community. Not having that community makes you feel more vulnerable, more susceptible to when you feel sad for a long period of time, then it leads to depression, you know? And I guess, you know, not having that community sort of environment and setup and support puts them in a very difficult situation where, hey, you don't have to be mentally ill to seek counseling, to seek support, you know? If not externally, what support do you have within your family, within your friend circle, within your community? And, like, the art of... just sitting down and connecting and having a quarter with someone, it makes you feel like when the pressure is so much, because we do live in an insular society, we carry everything in here in our mind, you know, and so releasing that pressure a little bit allow us to really like have more capacity to deal with our lives as we go, you know, and I guess there is a gap around. Mental health support for people who are from the ethnic community as well as former refugee as well. The conventional way of seeking mental health in the West is not really suitable or compatible to how they perceive mental health. They see mental health as something that I'm sick, I'm mentally, you know, classified mentally unwell, so therefore I have to go see someone to get support. But that's not the case, you know. You could be going through grief or bereavement, you know what I mean? You could have lost a family member. You could have had, you know, coming to a new country and trying to start anew. Yeah. Bro, that's stressful. Exactly. They say that the three most stressful things is going through a very difficult divorce, moving houses, and losing a family member, you know, or a loved one, you know? So they are going through one of the toughest things, you know? So having to resettle here is extremely difficult. And having the right support networks to help them, not so much like in the material sense, but in the mental sense, having people to talk to, allowing them to connect within their community. How do you allow them to build this capacity to deal with everything that they're facing, you know? And there is definitely a gap. I you know, being in the space, I feel like there's more work to be done in that space. I don't know what that looks like. I don't know what that looks like or what that entails, but you know, I put it out there. You know, if as a community, if you know, there's a lot of young people who are innovators and who want to do, you know, have an impact in their community, in their wider community, maybe they can come up with a niche or with a space for people to do that. You know, and like starting this podcast, you know, allowing people to connect and express themselves and get a chance to be heard. You know, creating platforms like that is also a good start in that direction. Yeah. You know, good step in that direction. Yes.
Yeah, no, yes. Wonderful. I think it's great what you're sharing about people come to hear you with different. Factors contribute and also understanding the mental health approach into different way that what does exist here in New Zealand. So within that, about Dimisa, we know especially men is not talked about. and you have dealt maybe with many clients, or we call them like many people who have helped. Can you share us some experience, like what do the, let's say, Eastern men face when they come here with like a new system, new way of dealing with life, new way of understanding rules? Is there any kind of experience you want to share with us, so people watching listen to understand more how we can understand them and how we can help, give the help if we can help?
I guess universally, you know, men are kind of taught to be tough, taught to kind of, you know, suck it up. And so I guess talking about our emotion doesn't come naturally, you know, to express ourselves to even our peers, you know. So we might be going through a crisis, we just kind of go through life until, you know, we reach breaking point, you know. And that's even more stronger in the ethnic community, right? You know, some people may never have heard, like, their father telling them, "I love you, son." You know, these things are never expressed. You know, the father thinks, you know, like, my son knows I love him. I don't have to tell this guy, you know, that I love him. He knows that.
Or maybe he will kick you, and they said that's a sign of love.
Exactly. Or knocking the head is a sign of love, you know what I mean? So it's one of those things that puts men in a bit of a difficult situation in terms of talking about their emotions, how it is they're feeling, expressing the inner sort of struggles and battles that they're having, you know. And so it's very important that, you know, that we seek that sort of that space that we feel safe and can be vulnerable, that we can share our inner feelings and emotions with those who you know, we trust and feel safe in doing so. And it doesn't have to be a professional. It could be someone that, you know, a friend of yours. But I guess, you know, if it's something more personal and you don't want to share with your friends, you know, go see a counselor and see how it goes for you, you know. And sometimes, you know, if you don't know something, you don't know the benefit, you know. Like if you don't go and see what a counselor can do for you or what it feels to speak to a counselor, then you will never know the benefits, so therefore you never seek it out. So my advice to ethnic men, former refugee men, all men in general, is that make that time to seek support when you're going through a trialing situation, or when you're going through a crisis, or when you're overwhelmed by life. You know, life can be overwhelming at times, you know, and we feel like as men we have to have it all together. And for example, if you're a married man, and the rent is not paid, the light's not on, it's your responsibility to ensure that you work and ensure that your family is looked after. And so the burden that you carry, you know, it's sometimes invisible, but it, you know what I mean? But like, it's not about trying to say who's doing what and what have you, but understanding that the burden that you carry is heavy, and sometimes it can be overwhelming. So give yourself grace and seek that support whenever you feel like it's overwhelming. You know, like, you don't always have to have it together, man. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you don't always have to have it together. Sometimes, you know, like, going through a tough time allows you to learn about yourself, and seeking out support during those tough times doesn't make you a weak person, you know? So seek out support within your, you know, wherever you feel that you can receive that support from. But if it's something more personal and you know, that you don't want to share with community members or your friends, then seek out, you know, professional help, you know.
Right, yes. Right. So in that one, there's some, maybe you will face some ethnic men, they will say, you know, because of some cultural barriers or some stuff, they don't want to seek. Or maybe there's no trust. So here, what is, let's say, a good advice to tell those men that it's not shame to ask for help? Is it okay to ask someone else who maybe knows something better? So how you would advise someone who is like there from ethnic backgrounds, who used to think that, okay, everything I can sort it out by myself, while he's living in a different environment that's bigger than him. He need, which we know, which now everyone need to work to make a living in a good house. If you are like married, you have both of you need to work. Some of them take the kids to school, etc., right? So like responsibility is much more. It's not like before, like one person can work and five people can leave. Things, different environment, different system. So in order to survive, in order to adjust, what is the best advice here to say for those ethnic men who maybe have some sort of pressure or different type of impacting the mental health? What do you would say to them, like, to do?
I guess, as I said, like, the main thing is that there is a misconception around the impact or the need to seek out counseling, you know? And so they feel like they're not going to do anything for me. What's sitting in the room and talking to someone going to do for me? Like, I'm just sharing my issues with a stranger. What's a tangible sort of thing I'm getting from being vulnerable, sharing my personal stuff with someone who doesn't really understand my situation, you know? And, you know, my advice is that, you know, you might have this idea, you might have this perception about counseling or understanding about counseling, but the reality is that, you know, once you actually have that experience to share someone who's has no stake in the situation, they're completely, you know, they're completely removed from whatever it is that you're going through, and they give you, like, objective and constructive guidance with regards to, like, sometimes by talking to them, you come to your own conclusion with regards to resolving your situation. And so it's not about giving you something. It's about allowing you to express yourself until you get to that point where you actually understand what it is that you're feeling. And sometimes, like, putting into words the feelings that you're feeling, you know?
Bring it out.
Exactly. It out. And, like, labeling that. When you label things, you're allowed to, then you can dissect it and understand it much more in depth, you know? So just give yourself that opportunity to seek out that help and support, and yeah, so go from there, you know, and I guess, you know, you have to work with what you got, you know, and as they say, you know, like 100 lemon for 100 men is play, you know, 100 lemon for 1 man is a big burden. So just similarly with your mind and all the stress that you're feeling, imagine you can share it with someone. Imagine someone is able to support you, help you unpack it, and really understand what it is that you're feeling. And so I feel like that is the advice that I'll give. You know, give yourself the chance to experience that. Give yourself the chance to seek out that support and go from there, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
That's just amazing, amazing support, amazing advice. Well said. And the other one I want to ask about from your experience while working in the field of refugee sector, what is the biggest stigma or challenge that our communities from refugee backgrounds are facing?
The biggest stigma in the sense of, like, the broader view of former refugees, or I guess the biggest stigma is that, you know, former refugees have nothing to contribute. We have a lot of other issues that are, you know, that are domestic issues that we haven't dealt with, you know, like, why are we, you know, bringing more people here and making things more difficult for us, you know, because they're just leeches to the system. They don't bring any skills. They don't bring anything to the broader society. Why are we bringing them here, you know? That's, people have that view of former refugees. They don't understand that no one wants to leave their place of origin, you know. You know, they say that the soil of a person, if you know you're from where you fuck up to, like, the soil is butter. It's like butter to him. The person really, he's connected to his land. He's connected to everything that's surrounding that space. The only reason why someone has to flee with nothing is because there is safety issues. And I think the biggest thing about how people perceive, you know, crisis within the world, globally and what have you, is that, say that you're in a situation where you have bombs dropping every day, you have your family members dying every day, you have nothing to eat. What would you do? Like, what would you do? You know? And you have, you know, rhetoric, hardliners who say that, you know, these people are coming here doing all this stuff. All the narrative about you is so negative, and you're supposed to then integrate and be a positive contributor to the society when they themselves want to try to spit you out. You know, like, if we come from a place of humanity and try to understand and put ourselves in their shoes, then we can actually understand that if we were in their situation, we'll seek out safety as well. And we'll seek out better opportunities for our family. The main thing is that we want our whānau to be safe. We want to be able to provide for our family. We want safety and security. That's why we're here. We bring skills. We bring, you know, color, energy, whatever it is you want, you know what I mean? Dance. It's a lot of things that, that you know, that we contribute that are not acknowledged, you know what I mean? So sometimes it's not clear and visible to everyone, and people may be, may be more inclined to believe what the hardliners will say around former refugees and them being a burden to the system and what have you. But, you know, we're just seeking safety and security for our family.
Absolutely.
And we're just seeking better opportunities to ensure that, you know, we can be a part of the broader society and become, you know, patriots of this country, you know.
Mm-hmm.
This is where we call home. We're not going anywhere. This is our place now. Allow us to belong. Allow us to feel like we can contribute in a positive manner. And the reason why we're here is that it's because that our country is unsafe. The place that we're from is being destroyed. And so sometimes, you know, it's out of our control. What is the common man going to do, you know? There's wars going on around the world. People can have different views as to why these wars are happening. But what is the common man to do? They say that in wars, in when there's poverty, when there's a crisis, the most people who suffer are the vulnerable people.
Yeah.
That's why, you know, we are vulnerable. That's why we're seeking support and safety, because we can't do anything with our situation, you know. So
definitely,
I guess let's have a lens of humanity to look at our fellow men and try to understand that, you know, if we were in their situation, we'll be doing the same thing, trying to seek out safety and security and be able to provide for our family.
Yeah, yes. Absolutely, and. Well said. I think you said all about the speaker's stigma that face, which is in the name that is not people choose to be called refugee, but it's a term that I've used for those people who flee for safety, for security from persecution, war, and etc. So it's only happened when there's no choice left.
Yes.
And there's millions of refugees, which is few lucky of them who've been settled in different countries. And I think most of them, they are giving back a lot, because when you give someone's new hope, they become more patriotic, more thankful, more energy to contribute back. But, you know, of course, the news only focus on one or two stories who is bad. There's bad in everything. But then that's the impact the whole community. So within that, talking about the identity and the man and things into the mental health things, how do you see that New Zealand or Aotearoa? Do you think there's enough support around mental health if someone is coming from our backgrounds and trying to seek help or trying to adjust with a new life? Do you think there's enough support? If not, do you think there's anything new to add or to have?
Yeah, I guess, as I said, you know, like, the idea of mental health and seeking support doesn't come naturally to newcomers and former refugees. And so meeting them at the point that that they're at, in terms of, okay, they see when you say mental health, they see it as someone who's sick, you know, someone who's unwell, you know. I guess the thing that could be done is around allowing people to understand that every single person, Tom, Dick, and Harry, they all go through mental health. Yeah. Everyone at a point within their life, they have something that's overwhelming for them, which causes them a deep sadness, and they need someone to guide them through that process, you know?
Yeah.
And because we don't have access to a community or a support network that we used to back home, we have to utilize the resources we have here, you know? And as I said initially, there is a gap, so there may be an opportunity to carve something out that's more suitable or that's more ideal. I don't know what that looks like, you know what I mean? So, but I guess for now, it's utilizing the resources that we have and ensure that, you know, that we use that support. Yes, mental health has become, you know, something that's more recognized more recently, and a lot of people are talking about it. Mm-hmm. The more we have corridor and dialogue around it, the more we be able to, you know, address the silent killers of society, you know? Yeah.
Wonderful. Because the other thing, if you agree with me or not, one thing I'm afraid is a lot of agencies who look after the refugees' settlements, they think every single one who arrives is having a mental health problem. And the problem is, we all go through things, but like you said, they deal with us in a way that impacts us later, which is through employment, everything else. And then the whole society will take that picture that, oh, you're a refugee, we don't want to hire you, too much problems, too much. This is the bad things, the promotion they do, because I have seen some of the agencies, really, they deal with these stories for the empathy for the funders. They don't see the long-term impact creating, not just on the person, but on all community names. Do you agree in this sentence about this narrative?
I guess that's not my sort of, understanding to a certain degree. I think because in the initial stages, there's this euphoria. You're so excited. You're in a new country. Yes. This is what you've been waiting for over 10 years for some families, you know?
Yes.
And so the mental health comes a bit later for them, you know what I mean? Like maybe two years down the track or 3-4 years down the track. Yes. So because the initial stage is they're just looking for basic stuff, you know? And then the mental health aspect comes later on down the track. And I guess, you know, the agencies deal with the foundational stuff, the housing, the access to entitlements, the job, searching for jobs, those who are ready to work, getting them ready for jobs, English language, study, allowing them to, you know, have a goal in place and what have you. So I guess, you know, that hasn't been my sort of experience, but, you know, you've been in this sort of feel more longer than me. Maybe you're exposed to things that are like that, you know. So, but for me, you know, yeah.
It's cool, cool, and that's great. Just a few, well, that was a long time ago, a few years ago, when I heard some of the different narrative that they've been promoting and things. But
I guess the idea that you're a former refugee can have, you know, stigma itself.
It is, yeah.
You know, maybe employers may think this person doesn't really understand the New Zealand culture. That means I have to accommodate for that. I don't know what that is. I don't want to get involved in that. So I might not hire this person. Or a landlord may feel like, oh, I don't know what they're going to cook in my house. I don't know if they're going to stink up my house or stay in the car. But whatever that may be, it's the ignorance that prohibits people or puts a barrier between you and the other human being, right. You know? And so I guess those who know, and those who understand, and those who choose to be ignorant, you know, I invite them to give an opportunity to actually understand that, you know, we are just all human beings and wanna be understood in terms of, you know, we wanna be understood in the sense that, you know, we want same opportunities as everyone else. And I guess, you know, I guess, like, it's who you talk to, right?
Yes,
my experience is different to yours. You know, someone else may have a different experience, you know. And I guess, you know, the elephant in the room is that with regards to, you know, integration and feeling like a sense of belonging, discrimination and racism is one of those things, man, that is so freaking annoying because you cannot do anything about it. You have mm-hmm. you're born as a Middle Eastern person. You know, you can't really do anything about it. I'm born as an African man. I can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
When you cannot do anything about something that people dislike about you, it causes you to be in a place where you're so, you despair, you know. You're like, what can I do? Like, and then, you know, it causes you mental health, right? You go into a bit of a, you know what I mean? Where do I belong? People see me and they don't like me. And then you internalize every interaction in that way. So you go into a room, you know, I tell you this something, story, bro. I was really embarrassed with myself after I realized, you know, sometimes, you know, life has funny ways of teaching us something, you know, never to assume, you know. Obviously, my interaction with, you know, with individuals who are quite hostile towards you for whatever reason, you know what I mean, then you internalize it as racism, right? And so there was this incident that there was an individual who I saw in Newtown. He always walks past me. I try to say hello to him. I try to engage with him. He didn't engage with me. I'm like, this guy is racist. Of course he's racist. I'm trying to engage with him. He's not saying hello to me. And so I see him multiple times. I try to engage with him. He ignores me. Mm. I say, this guy is definitely he's racist. You know, he sees me as someone who doesn't belong here. That's why he's not saying hello to me. So long story short, I then ended up, I work as a mental health support worker as well. So I ended up working with this guy. This guy is on a spectrum, you know? And he only interacts with people who he knows. Mm. He doesn't know who I am. I'm a stranger to him. So he did not engage with me for that reason. So for me, because of my past experience, I thought he was being racist to me. That's what racism and discrimination does to you. It internally messes you up. It makes you want to assume things that are not really happening. You know, sometimes they're blatant and open. Other times they're quite subliminal. You don't really know. But, you know, like, it does impact you. It takes a while for you to get over these things, you know, because you can't really do anything about it. You know, if you don't like me because of my attitude, then I can fine tune that. If you don't like me because of the way I dress, then I can, you know, fine tune that as well. You know, if you don't like me because of my hairstyle, then I can change that as well. But who I am, my skin color, what I look like, I can't change that. God has created me this way.
Yes.
I didn't choose the family that I was born into. I didn't choose what part of the world I was born into. And we don't choose any of that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so if we are vilified because we're from a certain area or because we look a certain way, bro, give me a break, you know?
Yeah.
So there's nothing that you can do about that. And really, that's like the most hurtful thing.
It is.
It really hurts me. Like, I cannot stand that nonsense, you know? Absolutely. I can't stand that.
Absolutely.
You know? And again, goes back to ignorance. People don't give you the time of the day to understand you as a human being based on their preconceived notion about who you are, whatever it is that they see on the news. Then they judge you based on that, you know?
Exactly.
And we live in a society where the algorithm feeds you what you like.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
You know? And it's really hard for people to come out of that, you know? And so I guess, it's one of those things in society that really irks me, you know? I hate that.
Well, just well said. Look at the time. We passed it a lot from the normal time of the podcast, but I just love and agree everything with you saying, brother. Thank you so much for sharing this wisdom, this koriro, this conversation. I'm sure someone who's watching, listening can relate and can help. Someone's there, give them the courage to get support, to reach out to the people. Just get out, seek the support. It's okay. We all go through things. We all go through different experience. But it's good to share. It's a good. So this is one of the way we share. We talk to each other. We share. Appreciate the koriro. So we're coming to end of the podcast. I know we can do section 2 and 3 as well with it.
Yeah.
But I have this tradition on this season, which is a question from a previous guest.
Mm-hmm.
If you've been watching our YouTube, you will know who was that.
So
you will see. And then you will have opportunity to write a question for... Right. The next future. Yes. Let's see what question you have. The question says, do you have a hope for the future? And what future do you envision?
That's a deep one, man. That's a deep one.
You have a minute to answer this. Go ahead.
Do I have hope for the future? Of course, there's always hope. You know, without hope, it's hard for you to live your life. And I guess hope allows us to carry on. You know, when times are tough, when we feel like we can't carry on, it's that hope that allows us to continue. Yeah, I do have hope for the future. What that future looks like, I think, you know, I don't know, man. I don't know. You know, I hope is a good one, and I hope that, you know, humanity prevails. That's all I'll say.
Beautiful. Well said. Thank you so much again. Appreciate you, Tom, coming here and the Kōrero show with us. No Look worries. Forward to see you in a future podcast.
Sounds good.
Awesome. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, everyone, watching, and hope you enjoy it as much as I enjoy it. Talk to Dimisa and leave us comments and your thoughts about this. And ka kite. See you next one.
That program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard. Thanks, New Zealand On Air, for funding accessmedia.nz.